Yeah, so we were reading the, reading through the, you know, the Masorah part, we'll call it, of the end of Ubikashta Misham. And I think we were at the point, which is where your Ha'ara came from, of discussing the idea that Masorah is like, or the Talmud Chacham, the comparison to the Navi, both the Navi and the Talmud Chacham, again, beautiful formulations. Let me just clarify again something that I said last time that I think is really important, but I don't want it to be misconstrued. And I said that a lot of the things that are said here are said without compelling evidence, without evidence or without compelling evidence. So I think one of you asked me about that. So what do you mean by that, or what does that mean? So what it doesn't mean, I didn't mean to say, therefore, you know, we don't have to, you know, be, therefore we dismiss it because there's no evidence. I meant the opposite. And that is that, you know, some of these formulations and some of these perspectives, you know, don't flow only from a single text. In some case, they don't flow from any single text, but they represent the, you know, the aggregate again of the experiences and the wisdom and the Masorah, right, and the Torah. And the instinct of a first-tier Talmud Chacham, and in some cases, you know, that is even more precious. You know, Mashal Ma'adavar Dome. I always like to explain that when the Rambam says yearly, you know, he's basically acknowledging that he doesn't have a makar or a clear makar for what he's saying. But those yearlies are not things that the Rambam is equivocating about. And in some respects, you know, whether he admits it or not, whether he says Yerali or doesn't say Yerali, when the Rambam is saying things that are more singular to his own understanding, right, in the end of the day, it's not less convincing, it's more convincing. Or less, put it this way, in terms of his personal authority anyway. If you're a Rambam skeptic, we'll say, so then, like, you know, make it tasty. You could say, oh, he doesn't have a makar, or he's admitting he doesn't have a full makar, why do I have to listen to him? If the only reason you listen to the Rambam is because you think that he, you know, had a lot of bakiyas, and he copied down the Gemaras in an efficient way, and therefore everything that he's writing is an explicit Gemara, then when he says yearly, or when he doesn't say yearly, right, but he's, you know, going out on a limb, and, you know, there are, you can identify, you can discern within his worldview that there are, or you can discern within what he's saying, you know, that he is taking a position on things that is not mukhrach from the sugya. Other people could learn it differently, even after he's learned it this way, you know, yesh makom lachlok. So the Rambam's authority is no stronger, right, than his citation of, you know, absolutely compelling texts. So then, you know, you've identified a weak spot. But if you think that, you know, the Rambam, you know, was more than the sum of his parts, and that his instinct and his immersion in the totality of Torah, right, produced insights and perspectives that, you know, become part of the Masorah and are, you know, the invaluable, like, window into the mind of a great halachic thinker, so then, actually, this is like, you know, vintage Rambam. This is, you know, Rambam, not just, you know, because it says it in the Gemara, but the Rambam's total understanding of the system. And what I'm saying about the Rambam is true about, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu, and it's true about, you know, Rabbi Akiva, and it's true about Rabbi Akiva Anger. Meaning, when somebody has achieved, like, a certain stature and experience and instinct, right, so we, you know, tremendously value, you know, it's their insights, their instincts are invaluable, and that's their personal Torah. If we talk about again Masorah, you know, and a Talmud Chacham is contributing to the Masorah. Talmud Chacham, I always like the image of, you know, walking Sefer Torah. What we mean by that, we'll actually talk about that when we finally get to the beginning. I want to talk about the concept of a Shira and Shira in particular, but more even the general notion of Shira. But you know, we talk about Talmud Chacham in that way. This is really what we're saying. We're saying that, you know, that he, this again goes back to the Ish Halacha, you know, paradigm, which is somebody who, you know, subordinates himself, you know, first to the system, and, you know, his way of thinking, you know, to it, and therefore becomes one with this system. But then, as an insider, you know, who lives and breathes it, you know, and who is attuned to it, which is the key, you know, we're interested in his chidushim, we're interested in his instincts. And that's where, you know, the nofech mishelo comes in. So when I said, I'm not just trying to explain what I meant, but it's also critical to all the, that's what there is to look for in these things. In other words, if the Rav, who was just very good, big bucky, which he was, but big bucky who knew a lot of Gemaras and Midrashim, you know, and quoted them very nicely, that would be, you know, Dayenu, I guess. But it would be him presenting what is there, and, you know, other people could probably do that also if they have the same kind of mastery. Although, again, a certain, you know, flourish and a way of doing it is still something important. But it's much more than that. It's the mastery that produces, you know, more than the sum of its parts. So some of these formulations about, you know, both the Navi and the Chacham as being somebody who, you know, is transformed by their experiences. Much easier to say that about a Navi and Nevuah than it is about Talmud Chacham and Limud HaTorah. But that the idea of, a Navi who's Kovesh Nevuaso, you know, being Chayiv Misa, and then like having a parallel to that, you also Talmud Chacham doesn't share, you know, his, again, not only his Bekiyas, but again, his insight, his instinct, his walking Sefer Torah-ness, that he becomes someone else, the B, you know, that, you know, he has that obligation. C, that what he shares with others, both in Nevuah and in Chachma, for Talmud Chacham, is like, you know, Atzilas Ruach, you know, Vayatzel and Ruach Asher Alav, as we were talking about, the Smicha of Moshe Rabbeinu, as opposed to simply the Smicha of Yoshua, but maybe it's also part of the Smicha of Yoshua, too. Ad Beis Dino Shel Yoshua, Ad Beis Dino Shel Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Rambam's language, Vayatzel and Ruach, or the Sina Mehodo, that idea that is true, you know, not only at that point in time with Moshe Rabbeinu, but that some aspect of that in every Nevuah and in every learning situation is a very special perspective. So it's not muchrach from Koros, but it's a compelling and a very, it's a compelling vision, really, and a very powerful one at that. And then the connection to, you know, gradations of, you know, Sarasa Dibros B'tam Elyon, regular Limud HaTorah, begin by Pidur B'Yeshiva, all those things become, you know, part of this as well. So that's what I meant, excuse me, by, that's what I meant by, No, it's fine. I'm going to waste time. For some reason I can't get rid of the, that's what I meant by the notion that you know, these things are not proven. I don't mean that, you know, therefore they're like, you know, fantasy or figment of imagination. I meant the opposite. I mean, these are like very distinctive insights of a person who spent his entire life and whose, you know, level of understanding and insight is so great that, you know, he's sharing it with you. And you're getting, you know, it's a revelation in his personal understanding of Torah. It's ironic because he's talking here about Masorah, but that's really what the idea of Masorah is too. Masorah is this combination, right, of handing over a tradition intact, which means like a faithful, rigorous, you know, careful act of transmission and conveying something that exists, and certainly that's true about knowledge and information, but it is also about, again, a certain perspective and sensibility, And once you, the walking Sifrei Torah kind of are the people who are responsible for the transmission, so it's inevitable and it's totally desirable, you know, that the Nofech Mishalahem, you know, becomes part of that. And that's a critical thing. Again, you know, in the beginning of Bava Kamma, I have to apologize to Aryeh because he heard this already. But Rabbeinu Yonah, in the beginning of Masechet Avos, when he talks about Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misinai, with Masorah Yoshua, so he asks, you know, he says, you know, this idea of Masorah is very critical. Torah was given with Imperusha, and it's important to emphasize that. And then he says, like, after all, if it wasn't for that, then we wouldn't know, you know, what we only know by Masorah, which is that, you know, Mazik is a person who violates Gzeil. Okay. So I just thought that was, like, ironic but perfect, in the sense that it doesn't say anywhere explicitly that a Mazik violates Gzeil. There are many poskim, Rishonim, poskim, who probably think it isn't true. And Rabbeinu Yonah's tradition from his Rebbeim, or his own understanding of all the sugyas, which is based on the methodology that he gained from his Rebbeim, led him to the conclusion, right, that he considered to be, at this point, you know, a fact, right, something that's self-evident. I don't know if it was always self-evident or at what point it became self-evident, but it happens to be controversial. So this self-evident to Rabbeinu Yonah, which is controversial to many other people, is one of his examples of, you know, why we need a Masorah. So that's a great example of the Nofech Mishalo, or maybe not Mishalo, Mishal Rabo, or Shal Rabbe Rabo, whatever it is. And that is something that whenever somebody has an insight, a Kiddush of some sort, and you wonder, you know, Komash Talmud Basik Asa D'Chadesh, you know, Nema L'Moshe Misina. That's really the dialectic that we are always trying to kind of pin down, right? Because on the one hand, it's Nema L'Moshe Misina, and on the other hand, you know, the Talmud Vasek is saying it, and we say, Omer, Davar B'Shem Omer, maybe Geula L'Ola. So we should be just saying everything in the name of Moshe Rabbeinu, which would be fair, because a lot of stuff is probably not true if we're saying it in Moshe Rabbeinu's name. It also isn't fair because, based on this Yesod, you know, the person who discovered the insight, you know, and who's linking it back, you know, by connecting the dots back to Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, he deserves a lot of credit. And, you know, essentially, that's, without going into too much detail, that's the famous story of Rabbi Akiva and Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? The Gemara has a story in Menachos, and Daf Chavtes, that, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, heard about, you know, Rabbi Akiva, that he was Dorish Tilei Tilim Shel Halachos, and, you know, he wanted to, like, you know, sit in on a shir. So he went and he heard the shir. I'm sure everybody's familiar with the Gemara. And he had, you know, Chalisha Sadas, because he didn't understand what was going on there. Until Rabbeinu Shalom told him, like, you know, hold off just a couple more minutes, like, be a little more patient. You know, then one of the Talmidim raised his hand and they said to Rabbi Akiva, like, you know, Mechatesli, like, where'd you get this from? And he said, what do you mean, where'd I get it from? I got it from Halacha L'Moshe Misina. I got it from Moshe Rabbeinu. So then Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, felt good. So again, the point of the story is not an ego, you know, it's not an ego tale. You know, in other words, Moshe Rabbeinu felt badly because he felt like left out, and then he saw he was getting credit, so he felt good. It has nothing to do with credit. It's all about, like, like, he didn't understand because things, you know, the many centuries had gone by, and, you know, whatever principles he gave to Klal Yisrael, you know, they've been worked and reworked and reformulated and reapplied and, you know, this way and not that way. And, you know, all these things have a life of their own. That's why Torah is so dynamic, right? That's why it keeps going and people get credit. So originally he was thinking, like, what's, you know, what is my role in all this, or what happened to what I got, and how did it get from here to there? But once he heard, this is my understanding, but I think it's correct, that once he heard Rabbi Akiva saying, what do you mean, it's Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, he was able to trace back, you know, to connect the dots back to the Klalim that he gave to Klal Yisrael. And then he realized that, instead of being a rejection, right, of what he had taught, it was like the ultimate fulfillment of it. You know, just like the pilpul of Sneal ben Knaz in the Gemara in Temura is like the perfect response to the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu dies, and Klal Yisrael, you know, lose their memories. That's where the Gemara, you know, quotes it in Temura. But of course, they don't really lose their memories, meaning they're on shaky ground and they have like a crisis. Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, who is the, you know, repository of all of Torah Shebaal Peh, and, you know, whose status as a Navi and as a Chacham, as a Rabbeinu, is unparalleled, is no longer there. And consequently, I don't know what that is, but we can wait a few minutes. And consequently, the, you know, what will be the future for Piskei Halacha and so on. And the temptation is, you know, they ask Shmuel, they ask Yehoshua, that's what the Gemara tells us. And in the end, the Gemara says that, you know, Asniel ben Knaz, you know, Hechzira bitov pilpula. So it isn't like, you know, we should say that it's Torah Sazniel, you know, Asniel, you know, but it isn't, of course. It's the ultimate compliment, you know, an expression of Moshe Rabbeinu's, you know, effectiveness is that, you know, they were able, after calming down a little bit, you know, to be maksir, you know, mitok pilpulo. So that's really what we mean when we talk about, you know, the nofech mishalo, the individual's contribution, and sometimes his instinct, or just, you know, the way he sees things juxtaposed in his experience, in his netiot, in his, you know, his temperament, or, you know, his intellectual orientation, or just his instinct, you know. It could be a million different things why he's the one who is megala this particular yisod. But in the end of the day, that becomes part of Torah, and that gets transmitted to the next generation. You know, again, not radical differences, but in an evolutionary way. So the Rav's perspective here about, you know, a Navi being transformed by his experience and giving something of his own personality, you know, to Klal Yisrael. And the same parallel in Limud HaTorah, that Limud HaTorah therefore is a gilui of some sort, is really based on this exact notion as well. And the fact that it is, as I say, without so many rayas, I mean, it works in many gemaras, it works in a lot, is part of the Rav's insight. And that's, you know, the formulation is really his in some respects, based on other things. So, where were we?
We got to the...
Yeah, we were in the middle of 229.
Yeah.
So, Tamidim Nikroim Banim, Kelo Mahut Ishiyutam Aruchanit Ne'etzala, V'noldam Michei Karav. Lefikach Ichmira Torah B'Kvot Harav Yosem B'Kvot Ha'orim, right? Harav Tamid Mitgaleh Mimamakei HaNefesh Shal Talmido HaNe'eman. I mean, this idea of a bond between a Rebbe and Talmud, because, like, they're involved in this great adventure and this, you know, discovery, this, like, you know, odyssey of you know, being megala dvar Hashem in different ways. So Nevi'ei Yisrael v'chachamav bokim v'olim mimamakei ha'todah historit shel ha'am. He's saying Nevi'ei Yisrael and Chachamim are not, you know, they're not gone. This is all part of this same idea of, like, the unification of the generations, because it's all, you know, time is not a factor in all of this, although, of course, the evolution and people live in periods, you know, in real historical periods. But in the end of the day, right, they're all part of this chain and part of this, you know, multi-door continuing conversations. So that's really what he's saying. Nishamot dorot rishonim legilui mitgalgalot b'merut ha-dorot ad shein niklatot b'nivchei mitziuta ha-historit Shel Knesset Yisrael, all this hanechsefet legula, that, you know, Klal Yisrael's consciousness, which is, you know, moving ever forward towards geula, is a an amalgam, an accumulation of all of these experiences. Shechina medaberes mitov grono shel ha'arar, dor ha'acharon ne'elach v'ne'ezav. Again, the language is just, it's drawing on, you know, classical Hebrew and rabbinic Hebrew and modern Hebrew all at the same time. Inagilui Chizayon Muhurpan on page 230, Atik Yamim, this revelation is not like, you know, old news, you know, or from a previous generation, and, you know, Chizayon Muhurpal, something that is, you know, confusing. Ela Chazon Chai V'ra'anan, meaning it's fresh and dynamic. Toseis, you know, it's bubbling. V'havayatova mitpate b'todat cherdat olamim v'arigat netzach. It comes from a place of, you know, of enduring yearning for the Ribbono Shel Olam. Kishalacha medaberes ala kabbalah o amesora, he mitapelet lo be'idia mufshetet. It's not referring to an abstract idea. El demashu reali choreg docheik docheif lepruula ulamas. And then he starts with this story. I guess I'm good. So regarding the story, we don't have to read the whole thing, but I just wanted to make a couple of comments about the story. Ritzoni l'saper al dvar chavaya ishit, right, shetadgim et ha'idia shel masora shanu oskim bo. And the Kliarov is very good at this, you know, weaving in personal, family history and impressions. But I do think it's a stunning, you know, it's just very beautiful, number one. But what I really wanted to say was that, I think I said it last time, the ability to, you know, to dramatize this, you know, is not just a dramatic ability, right? It really reflects somebody who experienced it, you know, and therefore has the capacity to describe it. So what's fascinating is that this, what happens then is this beautiful, you know, depiction of, a youthful, you know, memory. What I find is very interesting is that there's like a very well-known, I think I mentioned, parallel to this, you know, that the Rav in a Pigeon of Ben, in Queens, by the way, Forest Hills, at a Pigeon of Ben, the Rav spoke, he said something very similar. But it starts from two opposite sides of the age spectrum. That I thought was just like an interesting thing. Like in the Pigeon of Ben, he was in his, late 70s. And he started off by saying, I'm sure you all heard this tape or have seen the print, you know, that when he walks into the room, you know, he's already, you know, a frail and feeble, you know, an elderly man, and he walks in and he, you know, sees the fresh, you know, gaze of the young Talmidim, you know, and it's very beautifully depicted. And, you know, he's at the end of his life, you know, and trying to fight, you know, the feelings of pessimism and, you know, despondency and so on. And, you know, he looks at these young, optimistic, you know, visages, you know, people with their life, you know, ahead of them who are just beginning, you know, to make their mark. You know, it's like this, you know, you get the general idea. And he asks himself, like, you know, how can I, there's too much of a generation gap, how can I, how can I interact and how can I relate and how can I transmit, you know, to such a gap or a gulf and experience and orientation, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, the way he describes it, you know, we begin the shir and, you know, Abaya and Rava, and then the door, and there's a knock at the door, and it's the Balei Tosfos, you know, weighing in, and then the Shach comes in and so on and so forth, and Reb Chaim comes in. It's just very beautifully written. And of course, this is exactly the same, basically, personalization, you know, and again, this, you know, bridging the gap of generations, but it's from the perspective of a young child, right? So it's like two opposite spectrums in the age thing. This is the Rav as Ritzoni L'Saper Chavaya Ishit, right? Schorani Kedavi Natalia, right, when I was a young lad, right, Nar Galmud Bodeidaiti, that's also interesting, that's, you know, echoes, again, he wrote this in the 40s, but, you know, the beginning of Lonely Man of Faith, you know, he talks about, you know, loneliness, which is not the same as aloneness, right, but it's a, what he calls, an existential state, like a perspective, a feeling, not a question of whether he was alone or not. So now Galmud Bodeidaiti, Pacharti Et Ha'olam, the world scared me, right? Kar v'zar hayali ha'olam. You know, I remember feeling that the world was a cold and a strange place. Nidnei li ki'ilu hakol lo'egli, and everything was mocking me. Bram chaver achad hayali v'hu al tetzkukuli. Don't laugh, Haramba. Eich etyatadnu. How did we get acquainted? Pashut nivgashnu. We met. And then he goes on. He tells this very beautiful story about, you know, it reminds me a lot of, you know, the, you know, the Hakel, you know, issue. And you really see it in the beauty of the story. You know, and Hakel is supposed to bring, you know, Taf, you know, as well. There's a big debate among the Rishonim, you know, how to read, you know, the Gemara and the Chagiga, you know, and the Ramban, and the, you know, the Farsha Bala Torah. Does Taf really mean, you know, a child under the age of Chinuch who really can't understand what's going on? And if so, is there like any value, you know, to, like the Kliyakar has an expression where he says, it's like, you know, it's like bringing Eitzva Avonim. And some of them Farshim dismiss, even though Pashtus on the Gemara is that Taf, you know, L'Havi Schar L'Mivieyem is under the age of Chinuch. But 2 days in the Ramban, some of the other Farshim say it can't be, it's just ridiculous, it's absurd. You know, you're bringing some crying baby there or quiet baby there. But what's the point? But, you know, there is, you know, in the world of education, there is, you know, it's like, what is it, Carlyle used to say, you know, great men are reared in great nurseries, or something like that. I think that's what it's like. Thomas Carlyle? No? Torvada? No. It's a good line. It's a good line. So, or, you know, what they say in Masechet Avot, like, Ashrei Olato, you know, there's a certain, like, you know, just forgetting the, I think there's a certain mystical element for sure, you know, being part of a happening of Klal Yisrael, you know, and having all shechvot, all populations of Klal Yisrael, I've got to go in a minute, represented, and, but, you know, it's something to recount and to know that you were there, to hear from your parents that you were there, but also the experience itself. You know, we just don't know. You know, now they say, you know, play Beethoven to your, you know, to your infant. I don't know. Ashrei Olato. So, but this, of course, you know, he was in an age where he remembers the story. So what he says is, which is very beautiful, Orech Kavua Haya Rambam Debate. So that's why I say the personalization. So, of course, it's dramatic license. He's a great writer, you know, and, you know, just... But you can't make this, you also can't make this stuff up, you know what I'm saying? That's what I mean by the personalization. It just reflects a certain immersion, you know, a life in which, like, you know, the Rambam is more real, you know, than anything else. And your father, who's, you know, giving shir in the next room, you know, that the stakes to some, you know, not just, you know, giving a lecture or some intellectual exercise, even an exciting one. It's like the stakes are, you know, practically life and death. That's what comes across in this particular passage, which is so beautiful. Everything is so epic, right? So you have this child, you know, who, you know, who is reared in a certain amazing legacy already, right? And in our, you know, rabbinic dynasty, and from the youngest of ages, you know, has these feelings, you know, about the personalization of, he doesn't know who the Rambam is and can't read what he wrote, at least that's what he says here, but he doesn't understand the arguments, but it's not any less real, you know, because of that. So this is like, becomes his concrete reality. And, you know, very beautifully in the end of the piece, you know, he talks about, you know, running to his mother. I'm sure you read it. Everybody read it, okay. And being, you know, upset when, so, yeah, you know, the end he has, you know, that, you know, sometimes father, you know, didn't solve the problem, and, you know, it wasn't, you know, sasam simcha at the end of the day, and he was, like, upset, and he runs to his mother, and he's crying, belev karua, and she says to him, you know, very beautifully, you know, abba yimatse terutz al derei Rambam, right, vimhulo yimatse ulai atakash tigdal. Right, Tiasheva Divrei Rambam, Ikari Karim Ululmo Torah Mitoch Simcha V'Hispalus. So again, it's not, you don't usually associate Simcha and Hispalut with the world of Brisk, but on the contrary, that's really what it is. Meaning, it may not be expressed, you know, in an externally emotional way, but like in the sense that this is the epic thing going on in your life, and this is what matters, this is what you're crying about, this is what you're celebrating, right? That's the simcha and the hitpalut. And in this little vignette, you have this idea of mesorah, you know, this idea of the nofech mishalcha, you know, the bridging of the generations, and, you know, the idea of creativity. I think some of the descriptions of brisk are also kind of interesting. So we'll talk maybe another minute or so about that. I wanted, still want to read the end of the idea of gilui chai, and I want to stop and go back to the Igros HaRambam also, just to finish that piece on the Sora next time, and then we'll hopefully make a way to the beginning eventually.
Thank you.